I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show on BBS Radio, Station 3, with additional information on www.holistichealthshow.com. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest tonight is Sheila and Marcus Gillette. Following a near-death experience many years ago, Sheila became the direct voice channel for 12 archangels known as Thiel, who are angelic messengers from God. Their purpose is to help mankind feel the joy and excitement of manifesting spiritual experiences and illuminations that until now were considered the exclusive domain of mystics and saints, according to Sheila. With her husband Marcus, she co-authored The Soul Truth, A Guide to Inner Peace. More information can be found at www.asktheo.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, and I look forward to an interesting discussion. First, I find it interesting that you have 12 archangels collectively, known as Thiel, that speak through you. Can you tell us how this all began?
Yes, I had a near-death experience in 1969, which was the catalyst to my opening to being a spiritual medium, a direct voice channel for the 12 archangels. And mm-hmm. I know that because that's what they have told me that they are.
Mm-hmm.
And there is the collective name Theo. They will not identify singularly because they want people to pay attention to the message rather than the messenger.
Mm-hmm.
And in the near-death experience, I had pulmonary embolus, which both my lungs were affected,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't expected to live through the day. And I kept saying, God, give me a job. I just had a baby. I had two small children
mm-hmm.
at home, and I knew that I was the best parent for those little ones.
Right.
And I was in intensive care, and the cubicle, the room, became extremely bright. And I looked at the foot of my bed because I saw movement there, and Jesus was standing at the end of my bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, as you can imagine, awestruck.
Right.
And he didn't speak to me externally, but his eyes were mesmerizing, and I just kept looking at him. And he had a cloak on, or a robe with large sleeves, and he put his arms inside the sleeves, and as he did so, he smiled at me, and I felt as if the top of my head had opened up and warm honey had been poured in, because
mm-hmm.
I heard at the time he smiled a masculine voice inside my head, not my own thought voice,
mm-hmm.
but a very masculine voice say to me, "Remember, my child, you are loved." And then I just felt this warmth seep through my whole body,
and, mm-hmm.
and my lungs were non-functional, so I felt like I had an elephant sitting on my chest. And when that warmth went through the trunk of my body, I felt like I could just take a big,
mm-hmm.
deep breath like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I started getting better. The doctors were amazed,
mm.
and about 6 months after I got out of the hospital and I was strong enough to hold the energy, I started having all kinds of psychic phenomena happening to me, through me, externally, internally.
Mm-hmm.
I could do automatic writing. I had clairaudience, which is an inner mind hearing of the guidance, this masculine voice speaking again. And then I transed spontaneously and became the direct voice medium for these angels.
Hmm. And how do they speak through your physical body, and what happens to you when they are speaking?
What happens is that I feel them come in the right side of my body, and they engage on a cellular level with me so
mm-hmm.
that there can be this combination or direct link to my vocal cords, my voice. And they've been working with me for, it'll be 40 years
mm-hmm.
this year, and they have been continually raising my vibrational frequency to
mm-hmm.
align with theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they told me, and I felt that I've certainly had those experiences, that I could feel the physicalness of that adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
And I do hear the information as it comes through. There is an accent and a voice change. It's my voice, but much more masculine
mm-hmm.
sounding.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear the information, but it's not a total recall of everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's like remembering a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, it gets less and less. Except for the areas of information that may be applied to my life,
mm-hmm.
a lesson that may be applied to me, or something that is of a global content that I find fascinating in the sense of many things over these 40 years have been stated in the book, The Soul Truth, as well as my former book, The Fifth Dimension, that have come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I'm always looking at those things and remembering those things and watching the confirmation as they come forward. It's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Sheila, do you think that all people are capable of raising the vibrations at this point in history if they're open to this?
I absolutely believe so.
Yeah.
It's not the fact that I can do this. It's
mm-hmm.
that we all
mm-hmm.
can.
Mm-hmm.
And that never before in history, and Theo has stated this as well, have human beings been ready
right.
at a dimensional frequency level to accept their masterhood. It's just as the master teacher Jesus stated, all I can do, you can do, and more.
Mm-hmm.
And we're living in that time now, and I think that's why there's such great interest in this spiritual evolution of
right.
consciousness,
right.
because people are having their own personal experiences,
mm-hmm.
and they want to know about them, and it's quite an exciting process to have that connectivity, realizing that you're a spiritual being having a human experience
mm-hmm.
rather than the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going through a very difficult period right now, or at least some people look at it as difficult. I look at it as a very positive period because of what will be the outcome, at least from my point of view. But why do you think that the Theo group are coming through at this point in history? And what seems to be their main message?
I believe God has spoken to us always.
Right.
But the reason that they're coming and teaching and helping us at this time in our own consciousness of evolution is for that reason, because this is a time, historically speaking, of a grand transformation
mm-hmm.
into a global community, a
mm-hmm.
common unity of humankind. And much has been spoken about 2012. Theo's been speaking about it for four decades.
Mm-hmm.
And what they have said is that by the desire of the people, of human beings, there will be peace. And how that's brought about is we'll be witnessing these changes. And even though people are fearful of change, it's for the betterment of all. We'll
right.
have a global economic structure. And as we know today, that's being developed.
Mm-hmm.
And a global political structure, much like the United Nations, even more powerful, and there's going to be greater communication amongst the global leaders. And this common unity of human beings, a community of humankind about the world, because we have this global communication that we can know of each other
mm-hmm.
and we can celebrate our differences in our celebrations of life experience and not be afraid of one another. We can see we're all one.
Right, right. Many people have read The Secret, and there's also been a lot of books on the law of attraction. And how does the information in your book add to the information that we have from these books, or from The Secret and books on attraction?
Well, as you probably know, and maybe your listeners know, that
mm-hmm.
in the Law of Attraction, there's the book The Law of Attraction by Esther and Jerry Hicks and
mm-hmm.
Abraham. And Theo was the catalyst for Esther opening up to Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
We've been friends, and they were clients of mine in years past.
Mm-hmm.
And so the manifestational laws have been a universal law for thousands of years, actually. And so there's very much a complement to The Secret and the Laws of Attraction. But what Theo brings forth is the tool in soul integration that allows us to be open to receive all our dreams and desires.
Mm-hmm.
For it's one thing to place intention in the universal energy, But there has to be receptor to magnetize that back to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And some people ask, why isn't it working for me? Well, the energy is coming forth, but it's like a magnet. If there isn't an attractor, then it's repelled back.
Mm-hmm.
So the attractive piece or the receptive piece is us coming into that awareness of our total soul and knowing we're worthy of all of that abundance.
Mm-hmm.
And Theo today has been describing it, Harv, as an energetic boomerang,
mm-hmm.
where the thoughts that we project into the universe, into the manifestational energy of the universe, will come back, absolutely, as any boomerang would. What's occurring, however, is if people have not integrated on a soul level,
mm-hmm.
and reached the state of receptivity that Sheila and Theo were talking about,
mm-hmm.
is that the boomerang will literally come back and hit a wall of emotions, they describe it as.
Mm-hmm.
So as we integrate on an emotional and on a soul level, we heighten our ability to receive that when it comes back in.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're really integrating into the manifestational process the soul,
mm-hmm.
and providing tools for us to do our soul work, our soul integration work, which
mm-hmm.
is to move into a higher vibrational state of wholeness,
mm-hmm.
and receptivity.
Mm-hmm. How does Theo see the future of the planet?
Very optimistically.
Very optimistic.
Very, very optimistically. We're in a unique position. Humanity is in a very, very unique time in history.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to, through our thoughts and emotions and feelings and intentions, to be able to create a remarkable human experience going down the road. They're very optimistic in speaking about the years between now and 2012.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're all very hopeful and very optimistic about Barack Obama,
right.
Becoming, the leader that he is and the role that he plays in this. And Theo has actually spoken about this quite a bit in terms of the perfection of the timing of his leadership. And things are shifting. And like Sheila said earlier, the global economy is emerging. The global community, the common unity, is emerging now.
Hmm.
The magnificence of this experience is beginning to be expressed by more and more people that are aware of the possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the soul integration teachings in our book and the tools and techniques that Theo gives us to be able to move into that expression. So it's
mm-hmm.
a very, very exciting time that we're living in, and they're very optimistic. And they're answering the questions about the future of our planet, our economy, and just the human experience in general.
Mm-hmm. I believe very much the same as what you're saying, and my SETI group find it surprising sometimes because I also believe that Bush had a very important role in all of this because he did so much to harm the environment, international relationships, all of the things that are important now, that people sometimes need a push in one direction in order to be able to go in a different direction.
I totally agree with what you're saying. Look what happened in the election and how many people became involved.
Right, right.
People became less apathetic and
mm-hmm.
more thought-provoked and more involved in their decision-making than ever before.
Right, right.
And I think I found that very exciting because they became involved in their own lives.
Right,
truly.
Right.
It wasn't just about our country. It was about themselves. And
right, right.
They woke up.
Right.
Which is fabulous.
And had they not woken up, the outcome could have been quite different.
Very much so. But as we've been speaking about this topic, that's what Theo was talking about, this transition of consciousness,
mm-hmm.
that people need to take accountability for their own emotional maturity
mm-hmm.
and their own presence on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so the activism that is occurring now in people's lives, I think, is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And also, a majority of people do not like change.
Right.
We get complacent and comfortable in what is known, even
right.
though it may not be the best for us. And so I think we're being challenged now to step out of that comfort zone and really grow and become this global community.
Mm-hmm.
A guess we have to celebrate George Bush as being the catalyst for this stuff of apathy. Right? Well, there's so many people that just said, man, I gotta get involved now.
Right.
You know? Right. I can't sit on the sidelines any longer watching all this go on. So,
right.
I mean, he played his role beautifully.
Yeah, right.
You know, positioned us all very well, I think.
I learned early on about change, that you have to flow with it, because it was very difficult for me. And when I graduated from nursing, I took my first position in a community that I didn't care for, and I stayed there a year. Then I moved to New York City, where I wanted to be, and I took a staff nurse position, and that lasted about 8 months, and then they made me head nurse, so I moved to a different unit, and I stayed there for about 3 years, and then I moved to California. So it seemed like I was always moving to a new environment, to a new type of work and so forth. And at first I resisted it because I didn't like change. But, you know, after a while you kind of learn that life is all about change. And so our bodies even change as we grow from a child to an adult to an older person. So life is all about change, and so you have to kind of flow with it.
Indeed. Indeed.
Well, we have to put our arms around it and embrace the possibility.
Right, right. Now, can you summarize some of Theo's comments on organized religion and the current spiritual awakening?
Whatever gets you to God, Harv. Theo's teachings are, as Jesus is, very, very non-judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
Every soul creates perfectly for its in its human path, its highest learning. Or, you know, organized religion is wonderful in that it brings community together, and it is a path to God. And I'm sure in the belief system of the people that are involved in it. In our book, in the spirituality chapter, Theo talks about the fact that organized religions are going to have to shift to a position of creating a more personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
More personal experience with God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, we don't need to go through another human being to experience the divine.
Mm-hmm.
Through meditation and awareness and all the tools that Theo provides us, we can have that connection in the moment-to-moment experience.
Right.
There isn't a judgment of organized religion, but there is the anticipation that there's going to be a shift. There already is a shift going on. There's a lot of people leaving organized religion to find their own personal experience with God, many through meditation.
Right.
Personal experience. People ask us what church we belong to. We say we home church, you know, which is our meditation room. And I think a lot of people are moving into that. And again, too, there's a lot of, you know, great churches, the Science of Mind churches, the Unity churches, the New Thought churches, and some of the great teachers that are emerging in those environments that are, you know, bringing the teachings similar to what Theo teaches, certainly, of the personal, having the direct personal experience. There's that old saying that only a fool believes another's word over their own personal experience. And it's an old Sufi saying, and it's true, you know. So they're not judgmental of it, nor are they critical of it at all, but they're very clear that if organized religions remain exclusive or judgmental of another human being's path, such as condemning homosexuality, well, that's ridiculous. That's an absolute aberration, in our opinion, of what true spirituality is. So I think that that's what their primary message is regarding you know, spirituality and organized religion.
I moved away from organized religion many years ago because I found it too limiting, too dogmatic, too judgmental, and so forth. And the church that I did go to that I enjoyed was what was called the traditional Quaker church, because it was a silent service, and as the Spirit moved you, you stood up and spoke. And it was a wonderful group to meditate with, and a wonderful group of people. So that was my church for many years. Occasionally I go to Unity, but most of the time I just tend to my daily meditation and prayer and trying to be of service to others and apply the spiritual attributes. So I don't get much into the organized religion anymore. Part of your book title is A Guide for Inner Peace, which to me is a very important part of holistic health. Can you summarize some of the information that leads to inner peace?
Yes. As we know, people want to be happy,
mm-hmm.
but happiness is fleeting.
Right.
You can be happy at a wedding. You can be happy buying a new car. You can be happy having a new home or meeting a new relationship. But that can be fleeting. But what people truly want is to feel comfortable in their skin, to be at peace inside their hearts. So the unique guide to inner peace is the process of soul integration, about accessing the fragmented aspects of our soul that block that peaceful feeling, that feel abandoned and act out from the emotional base. So it's a guide for people and tools for people to get in touch with those aspects of self that block that peace within them.
Good. There are many reports of people having personal experiences with angels today. In fact, there's one person in my study group that has and sees angels around her and that comes to our study group. What is Theo's advice for those wanting these experiences, and why do they seem to be happening so frequently now?
As I stated early on in our discussion, this is the time that people are available, that they know that they're more than the third-dimensional experience, more than their physical bodies, and they've raised themselves up high through meditation or understanding that they can do this. You know, there's a story about the sailing ship that sailed into the bay and was sitting there anchored, and nobody saw it until one day one person had the vision to see and said, look at that. And it's been there for a week or more, but nobody saw it until somebody had the presence of that vision. So it's kind of like that. It's always been available to us in heightened dimensional expression and frequency, but now we have come to a place where we can see and experience, and more people are doing it because it's available to them, and it's making it okay, and it's not fearful. You know, so much of our blockages have been fear-based, that we're going to see something bad. I mean, our television and our movies usually depict violent or negative things in seeing. And ultimately, the majority of seeing is of goodness and connectivity and spirit and angels, knowing that we're not alone and that we have this assistance about us. And so we've grown. We've evolved into a time now where we as human beings have this ability to connect and have that knowing. So it's very exciting.
Right. There's been a lot written about the year 2012, and I've also seen the date, December 21st, 2012. And some people say the world's going to end then, and some people say it's going to be enlightenment, and you hear many different views about what's going to happen. What is the significance of this year, and also what does Theo then have to say about this?
Theo's been talking about this for 40 years, 2012, and I know a lot of people have subsequently been talking about it since. First came out with them in the 70s, and it's this evolution of consciousness. It is not that the world's going to end. The world is going to be here, far beyond us, our time now. However, it's how we view the world that will change, it's our consciousness that will change, and this global community or common unity of humankind is evolving, where there will not be this separation or segregation, if you would, of one another. Theo talks about the celebration of the beautiful tapestry of humanity, to see the beauty in all. And so we're coming into a peaceful time, but of course the transition or transformational time is a little off-putting for some. And those who are fearful of that change see it as an end of the world in a negative sense. It's going to be the end of a certain era, let us say, and the birth of a new. So it is the end of the world as we've known it, because it's birthing a new way of being in the world. So I think that the perception is that there's just going to be on this day or this year time of 2012 everything will be topsy-turvy. Remember Y2K?
Right, right.
And, you know, the world was coming to an end then as well.
Right.
And what happened? We woke up on January 1st, 2000, and mm-hmm. we were still here. There was huge celebrations about the world, and nothing bad happened
mm-hmm.
that day. In fact, the violence stopped
mm-hmm.
for a day. I thought that was phenomenal.
Right, right.
And so, from my viewpoint, my personal viewpoint,
mm-hmm.
the year 2012 is a culmination of this shifting into this higher conscious state
mm-hmm.
or higher frequency for that to occur, which allows for all of this global shift to come to fruition that is for the betterment of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not going to be this huge thing, but it's going to be a culmination of many things bringing us into a better peace within ourselves.
Right. Is there anything else you'd like to add about the Theo Group or about their messages? It sounds like that they're very positive and that people need to hear this. But is there other things that you'd like to say?
Well, you know, I believe that we at this time in our lives are questioning so many things and being challenged in our external life to really
mm-hmm.
look within.
Mm-hmm.
And Theo teaches us how to be connected in the moment-to-moment expression of our life, which is really living our life,
mm-hmm.
rather being too far into the future or being too far into the past,
mm-hmm.
and to being very present in whatever we're doing, present with the people we're talking to, being authentic, living
mm-hmm.
an authentic life. And they give us tools and information on how to do that in a very gentle, loving way.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus, do you have something to add to that?
Well, it's just a magnificent time to be alive.
Again,
right. You know, the choice is to embrace this new way of being and really expressing
mm-hmm.
ourselves as spiritual beings here or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears as though those having the most difficult time are those hanging on to the old ways of being.
Right.
You know, not taking
right.
responsibility for their own personal emotional growth, blaming
mm-hmm.
others, and having resisting the opportunities and the possibilities that are present now.
Mm-hmm.
And just one last thing about 2012 is we're going to wake up on December 21st, 2012, or December 31st, or
mm-hmm.
nothing's going to change. It's already been changing.
Right.
Everything's
right.
happening now in the present moment, like Sheila just said. And so it's just a remarkable time to be alive if we accept the challenges, because there are going to be many.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be an easy ride. In fact, it might be very painful and very upsetting at times. But if we view the opportunities for growth as what they are, which
mm-hmm.
is just that, then we're going to be very blessed.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very happy with this experience, very peaceful with this experience.
Right.
Well, it's embracing the possibilities that are.
Right, right. Now, would you like to tell us about your new book and your products and how the listeners can locate these?
Oh, do we have to, huh?
Marcus, I'll let you do that.
Yeah. We have a new book out called The Soul Truth, A Guide to Inner Peace, which you've been referencing, which
mm-hmm.
is available on our website at asktheo.com. It'll take you a direct link right into Amazon, where you can purchase the book there. The neat tool that we have, the really cool thing Theo provides us as well, which is available for download on our website, is a series of guided meditations with very specific intentions. As an example, healing the physical body, soul integration, connecting with angels and spirit guides, multi-dimensional experiences, just to name a few. And those are available there as well. They're anywhere from 18 to 24 minutes long. They're guided by Theo, very specific in their intention, the usage of their words. It has a very strong kind of neuro-linguistic effect on the listener, as well as the vibration of Theo while they're speaking through Sheila and guiding these meditations. Those affect people profoundly in their personal spiritual development. So, and we have an interactive environment there that's complimentary downloads. We have the opportunity for people to actually download free meditations, a podcast, interview with Theo. So it's just kind of a nice interactive. We're building it right now. It's almost completely finished, in fact, and it's a version 2 or even 3.0 for us now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful place to come. There's a blog. You can interact with us and get a whole bunch of Theo's teachings that way as well.
Mm-hmm.
We invite everybody to come, put their name and email. We'll put them on an ongoing communication each month via a newsletter of Theo's teachings and prophecies and insights about what's happening currently on our planet and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
We invite everybody to join us. Oh, and the other thing I would say, too, Harp, is that we do have a calendar that would be also printed on our website for
mm-hmm.
upcoming events, live Theo experiences. We have many churches hosting us around the United States this year. We're very excited about that with the follow-up to the book that has just been published by Tarcher and Tarcher Penguin. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very exciting time.
Right, it is.
And we'd love to share it with your listeners and yourself as well.
Thank you. And I thank you very much for taking the time to be with us. And also I thank you for your 40 years of good work of helping others. That's a wonderful
thing. Thank you for
thing.
Having us,
Harv. Yeah, thank you for having us, Harv. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye for now.
Bye. My second guest is Dr. David Gordon, a clinical psychologist practicing at the Studio for the Healing Arts in Norfolk, Virginia. David conducts dream sharing groups, workshops, and retreats throughout the United States and Canada. He has written extensively, including his recent book, Mindful Dreaming. David has co-hosted the public radio program DreamWorks in Norfolk, Virginia, and has been on public radio affiliates in Philadelphia and Monterey Bay, California. He is active in the International Association for the Study of Dreams. More information is available at www.mindfuldreaming.com. I welcome Dr. David Gordon to the Holistic Health Show. David is going to talk about mindful dreaming. That is the title of his recent book. How did you get interested in dreams, David?
Well, actually, back some years ago in the mid-80s, I received an invitation to a conference on dreams sponsored by the Association for the Study of Dreams, which has now expanded to the International Association for the Study of Dreams. And I went there on a whim, thinking, well, this might be, you know, interesting to learn about dreams. And sure enough, it absolutely turned me on, and what I began to learn really had a major impact on my life, and I began to study dreams more intensively and to work with my own and with my clients, and it's been quite an interesting period since then for me.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting area. I always think of dreams as God's way of speaking
mm-hmm.
with us.
Yes.
So I like very much the idea of dreams as part of holistic health.
Mm-hmm.
In your book, you talk about archetypes and mindful dreaming. Help us understand archetypes and how they relate to what you have called mindful dreaming.
Well, archetypes is just a technical sounding word that really simply refers to the idea that there are symbols, imagery, and a variety of experiences that are common to all of humanity. And these images and themes and experiences and so on keep recurring throughout all eras and cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And from the perspective of mindful dreaming, there are 10 archetypes that I look at.
Mm-hmm.
And the first five are, you could say, are archetypal habits of thought or
mm-hmm.
ego strategies that cause us the suffering that we experience
mm-hmm.
in our life and in our dreams. And then there are five archetypal healing values, if you will, or qualities of consciousness that are kind of perennial spiritual values, but which are also very healthy psychological
mm-hmm.
values as well, that occur in our waking life experiences and in our dreams. And so mindful dreaming looks at how these archetypes occur
mm-hmm.
in our dreams and shows how we can recognize them
mm-hmm.
and benefit by recognizing them.
Mm-hmm. And what are these archetypal habits of thought?
Well, the five habits of thought are distraction. And again, think of these as kind of ego strategies, you know. Distraction, the wish to be in control, the strong impulse we have to judge, the habit of thought of judging anything and everything around us. The strategy of attachment, which the Buddhists, of course, talk mm-hmm. a lot about, and the eco-strategy of impatience, allowing ourselves to be in a constant chronic state of impatience.
Mm-hmm. And how do we recognize the various ego strategies that cause us suffering?
Well, the various ego strategies that that are at the root of our suffering can be recognized by the predominant mood that they cause us. In waking life and in every dream, there is a kind of emotional tone of, mm-hmm. of suffering that differs from one kind of dream to the next, but which are associated with these specific kinds of habits of thought. So in waking life and dreams, distraction leads to feelings of confusion, fatigue, emptiness, boredom. Control leads to frustration and futility. Judgment leads to feelings of unworthiness, again, whether in waking life or in dreams. Attachment leads to constant insecurity and fear of loss, because, of course, all things are impermanent and changing. And then finally, impatience. We can recognize impatience quite easily in terms of the fact that we're always impulsively jumping to conclusions rather than learning to wait until the correct answer arises within us in its own good time and rhythm. So there are dreams of distraction in which we feel literally distracted and unfocused, dreams of control in which we feel frustrated and powerless and sometimes paralyzed. We've all had those sorts of dreams. Dreams of judgment in which we literally feel judged, attacked, persecuted. These are very common kinds of dreams, either our own thoughts about ourselves, which are very judgmental, or feeling in the dream that somebody else is either judging us or we see them as bad people. These kinds of dreams we tend to experience ourselves seemingly as in a battle between good and evil. There are the predominant mood then of dreams of attachment, are feelings of loss and apprehension about loss. And as I said, dreams of impatience have a mood of literally impatience, of restlessness, and those kind of common qualities that go with that way of thinking.
So these dreams seem to be like real life living.
Absolutely, and I think that the key is to understand that in fact our dreams do reflect our waking life experiences and tendencies and habits. So that if we step back from it, we can see that the very strategies we indulge in waking life that don't work also are the same ones that aren't working in our dreams. And that's why we tend, you know, on the whole, to kind of think about our dreams as just full of troubles
mm-hmm.
and angst. And certainly many times they are. And it's helpful to see what it is, because we're imposing this suffering on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think of it that way, but we're actually, once we step back from it and we learn some mindfulness about it, we can see how these are our choices we're making to approach our life and ourselves in this manner.
Well, we all want to have our dreams better, so I know
right.
a little later you're going to tell us how to do
that's
this.
That's right.
So how do we recognize the other five types of healing dreams, David?
Well, so there are many healing dreams that we can have, and in them, rather than each of these kinds of dreams containing certain kinds of thoughts, they actually contain certain kinds of experiences, or if
mm-hmm.
you will, healing qualities of consciousness that are interestingly enough perennial spiritual values as well. There is instead of distraction, there is the experience of solitude that our dreams call us to embrace. Where our dreams call us to embrace humility, or following guidance rather than being in control, trying to plot being in control all
mm-hmm.
the time. There are dreams of compassion that replace our experience of judgment, because that's the only healing medicine
mm-hmm.
for judgment is the, you know, unconditional acceptance and caring and love of ourselves and others. There are dreams of non-attachment, as opposed to, you know, our clinging, anxious attachment to identities or things. There are dreams in which we experience the release that comes with letting go. Again, you know, a major focus of a Buddhist thought. And then there are dreams that replace our habits of impatient thought with presence, or being present in the moment, in the here and now. And again, that's the grail that we're looking for on our journey to experience that presence. So these dreams, generally, rather than creating any experience of suffering, leave us feeling supported, guided. There are feelings of gratitude and joy, and a breakthrough of insight in these dreams, a sense or experience of redemption. And ultimately, there's always an underlying feeling of peace that comes with these five healing kinds of dreams.
And David, can you give us some examples of these different types of dreams?
Sure. I think we can kind of take them in pairs. There are, you know, distraction dreams, and then there are dreams in which we release distraction and embrace solitude. You know, the 13th century Chinese sage Wu Men reminded us, 10,000 flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, a cool breeze in summer, snow in winter. If your mind isn't clouded by unnecessary things, this is the best season of your life. So we can see, first of all, you know, in the dreams of distraction, where again the predominant mood is one of feeling disoriented, confused, literally distracted. Let me give you an example of that. This fairly self-explanatory dream that a friend shared with me. He said, "I'm attending some kind of spiritual retreat. I'm on my way to class and feel like it's probably going to be boring. Then I realize that I forgot to read the morning newspaper like I always love to do. I head back to my room where I'm staying, but end up talking with the cook about the lunch menu. A young teenager walks by with a boombox and I can't hear what the cook's saying to me. I'm getting more and more confused. I can't find my way back to my room. I wake up incredibly irritated. I'm already stressed before I get out of bed, and I just want to keep the day a low-key one." So you can hear quite literally the experience of distraction and how, you know, suffering comes with that. And there's intuitively, this man wakes up feeling like the day needs to be a low-key one. Well, you can hear in that the, you know, beginnings of a change of heart, so to speak. Of what I need is to, you know, is to get quiet, to, you know, let go of this distractedness. And a lot of times we, without necessarily, you know, always understanding exactly what our dream is saying, there's an intuitive sense that just sort of prompts us or pushes us in the direction that we need to go. I'll give you one more example of a distraction dream. A woman who was constantly on the go and wanted to have a dream to understand why she was ill and what the illness meant for her in her life, dreamed that she said, "I'm in a room that has one of those old-fashioned telephone switchboards with all the lines and plugs. Some vandals come in and tear up the equipment and cut all the phone lines. I wake up afraid." So you can hear in that, you can see the metaphor of the old-fashioned switchboard with all of those lines, you know, tangled up and going every which way out into the world. And the vandals, which are her perspective in the dream, they're vandals, are actually what I call dream mentors. That is, that they're there to teach us something. They were there to teach her that these lines need to be cut, that it's that in order for her to heal and in order for her to get past this illness, that she needs solitude, not this constant going out into the world of distractions. Now, that same woman, later on in the same night, and this is a very common experience, our dreams take us from one lesson to the next, had a very profound dream of solitude. She dreamed the following: "I find that an old crone and young woman are living in my backyard, and I start to think how I can get them out into the world so they can have more support, because they must be pretty lonely. Then I realize that to learn from each other, they need to be left alone." So you can hear the remnants of the, mm-hmm. the first dream in there, you know, the sense of, well, they need to get out into the mm-hmm. world. You know, no one would want to be lonely. But, you know, then there's the dawning realization, the wisdom that becomes hers in the mm-hmm. dream, that what is really needed is to be left alone so that one can learn from the old crone within that mm-hmm. the wisdom that's there. And here's another dream of solitude. A woman told me that she, in her dream, walked into a churchyard and into a church and sits down and hears a voice that says, "The service can't begin until you put on your veil." So, you know, we all have the experience of going into our church or synagogue mm-hmm. or what have you, and sitting there distracted by all of the, you know, people that mm-hmm. are talking or what they're wearing or, you know, by all the myriad of thoughts that cross our mind. But the old idea of wearing a veil, mm-hmm. you know, of putting that space between ourselves and the outer world, mm-hmm. and that's the wisdom of the dream. And that's how our dreams can come in and provide us with a road out of our, a mm-hmm. path out of our, the suffering that's caused, in this case, by thoughts of distraction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about control versus humility?
Well, you know, control is something that's almost a revered way of being in our culture. The Taoist sage Chang Tzu said, "Do not struggle. Go with the flow of things, and you'll find yourself at one with the mysterious unity of the universe." So the predominant mood of control dreams is the same as the predominant mood we have in waking life when we're trying, you know, desperately to be in control. And, you know, there's so many things, the vast majority of things in our life over which we have no mm-hmm. control. So in
right.
some degree, it's a truism that we are in some kind of chronic background state of frustration and feeling powerless in one degree or another throughout our day-to-day life. So the mood of these control dreams are literally feeling powerless, immobilized, out of control. Sometimes even. I'll try to see if I can get back to that idea as well. That we can be seemingly out of control and that the problem is really too much control.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the classic universal dreams, I think probably safe to say most of us have had, where we're trying to call somebody and we get the operator on the phone. We can't get through, or we can't hear the operator's voice, or she puts us through to somebody mm-hmm. else, not the person we think we need to, you know, be in touch with. Or I get in my car and I want to get to work, and I keep going around in circles and ending up back mm-hmm. where I started. Or I keep ending up at the beach for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, it's important in these dreams to look at where we end up. Because, you know, that's actually the medicine of the dream. I'm thinking that, you know, what I need in my life is to get back to work and do more work. And the wisdom of the dream is saying, putting me at the beach, mm-hmm. whether I like it or not. And that's where that sense of frustration comes in. Because from my ego's perspective, that's the worst place I
mm-hmm.
can be. You know, what the heck? What's going on? You know, right? So these are the classic dreams. Here's another one that someone shared with me, a woman who really was tired of dealing with her very kind of cold and abusive mother, and who just wanted to be done with, you know, trying to figure out how to deal with her and wanted to just get past it and move on with her life. And of course she really wasn't at that point, and that's what her dream had to say to her. And this is how her dream went. She said, "My mother has died, and I'm working hard on the funeral plans. I make a list of family and friends to notify. I contact the funeral parlor and arrange for the kind of coffin that will be used and the time of the funeral. I've decided on what I'll say to the mourners and what songs will be sung. Though I'm not a musician, I even compose a dirge to be played at the end of the funeral. I finish the dirge just in time for the start of the funeral. I walk up to my mother's open casket to say my goodbyes and look inside. At first she seems in peace, but then she opens her eyes, looks at me, and smiles. I wake up with my heart pounding and in a sweat." So here, for all of her best laid plans, there's no keeping her mother dead. There's no burying her mother. Not that there might not be a time and a dream later on in which that can take place, where that letting go, where the time is right to let go. But the wisdom of the dream is, you can plan all you want to just finish your healing work with your mother, but you can plan the whole funeral, but if it's not the right time, it's not the right time. Mm-hmm. And so in the dream, her mother, opens her eyes and smiles, and this is terrifying to the dreamer. Oh my God, how can this be? I did such a perfect job. I was in so much control, So that's a classic kind of dream experience of being in control. Referring back to what I mentioned earlier about that out of control dreams can be actually what I'm calling control dreams. A lot of times a classic dream of being out of control is I'm in my car and I'm driving recklessly down the road and I come to a bend in the road and I crash into a a pole or into the mountain or whatever. And what this tends to always be is the reflection. It's like a warning in the dream. It's I'm trying to be so much in control. I don't care what the collective society says about what the rules should be. If the rules are 60 miles an hour, I can do what I want. Mm-hmm. I'll go 90 miles an hour. And so, we see the end effect is being, quote, out of control. But what this is asserting so much control, so stubbornly, so arrogantly, that we get in trouble or we suffer.
Mm-hmm.
So, there again, that's what that is about. So we want to then, look at the converse of these control dreams, dreams of what I call humility or following guidance. And I'll share with you a dream of a woman who, really a client of mine who had worked for a long time about letting go of her love of control. Everything needed to be always organized and, arranged perfectly and going, according to Hoyle as she felt it should be. And this was a major concern of hers on a daily basis. As she worked on this, she had this dream. I'm lying on the bow of a sailboat and my friend Sue Ann, who is a really confident and very trusting person, steers the boat. I've chosen to stand in a canvas enclosure that surrounds me completely so that I have no aids to see where we're going. It's as if I'm completely blindfolded. I'm even unfazed by the huge waves that hit the boat. Amazingly, I'm not feeling panicked the way I always would have felt in the past when I'm not in control. Mm. I'm just immersed in the joy of the wind and water, not caring where we're headed. It's the most glorious experience to feel such peace in my body.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are the kinds of dreams that show us that, it's not just a matter of disciplining ourselves, not thinking a certain way, not allowing ourselves to, telling ourselves don't be in control. There's actually an alternative way of being, an alternative quality of consciousness that when we clear a space in our mind, when we let go of these constant stories we tell ourselves in this case about needing to be in control, that a natural healing energy rises up within us. And the dream literally allows that experience of the joy that comes with letting go. Because we often think, and this is what keeps these things going, we think, well, if I let go of control or if I let go of my favorite distractions or what have you, bad things will happen. Or I won't have any control. And then who knows, And we're really being called to give the benefit of the doubt. It's not like blind trust, but to give the benefit of the doubt to the universe that there really is a wiser intelligence that we can surrender to, if you will, and fall back on.
My show tonight was too long for the allotted time period. So if you are interested in the rest of this interview, please go to my website, www.holistichealthshow.com, and you can download or listen to it on the blog. I thank you for joining me on the Holistic Health Show tonight. I'm Dr. Carlo Helvey, your host.